broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
After speaking with her, after looking at the emails, after trying to see if
it was... I think this guy, he doesn't want to leave it in D.C. He doesn't...
The term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term.
I am left with no other choice. So today...
When you're really ready to play, play for Nevada.
That's very tough to swallow.
World-famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots, a patriotic conservative radio program that is trying to save this country from a cabal of liberals and their liberal think who do nothing but attach themselves vampire-like to the American taxpayer and drain every last dollar from that individual, from that individual family, from that individual small business, from that individual larger business, from the individual who is a good earner and an individual who's made a lot of money in his life and maybe packed it away into retirement and something else, large companies, it doesn't matter. That the liberal in charge of Washington today has attached itself to the American taxpayer like a vampire in the night. And when you awaken in the morning, if you awaken in the morning, you have no strength at all. You have no economic strength, no economic will, in fact. And you are further and further and further in debt, enslaved to, as they say in the movies, the master. On this program, we try to spread a little garlic around, you know.
Yeah, try to put a cross, you know.
Yeah, burn a cross in the door or something, man. Or what else do they use?
Yeah, a lot of holy water.
Holy water. This program is holy water, garlic, and a cross for the bloodsucker. The bloodsucker that Washington, D.C. has become. And you know as well as I do. You're not, you know, you guys learned a long time ago, as I did, that we have congresspeople on both sides of that aisle, as they like to say, Republican and Democrat, who are in love with the blood-sucking. So let's not be fooled. When we talk about somebody who has gone to Washington, we talk about an individual that we sent off in much the way they used to send people off to Washington in the old days. Did you see the John Adams?
Yeah, the John Adams miniseries.
Yeah, when they sent John Adams off to the Continental Congress, and they feeded him, and they had horns blowing, and they had bands playing, and they had the confetti, and there was Samuel Adams, and he had his little carriage, and they were very proud, and they were very happy to go off to the Continental Congress. And that's how we send our people off. And what do we get back? A thing. The undead. Someone who's been converted into a bloodsucker. So you got to protect yourself, and the way to protect yourself is simply this. Recognize, have both eyes open, and see what it is you're dealing with. And also, of course, hit us up on our Patriot line at 877-876-7445 so we can talk about some of the madness, as long as you're aware of it, as long as you're aware of the madness, as long as you're aware of the fact that the asylum... The doors have been opened to the asylum, and we are now sort of surrounded by the nuts, you know. And there's that old story about the townspeople drank from the well. Did you hear the story of the townspeople drinking from the well?
Uh-oh.
And they went mad one day. The townspeople drank from the well, and they went insane. And the king was beside himself with grief and worry. He didn't know what to do, and the townspeople were crazy, and they saw this king as mad people would see a king, someone who is out to get him. Until one day the king drank from the well, and the people rejoiced and said, "Our king has returned to us."
What are you saying? And Obama?
I'm not saying anything, man, okay? Just I thought it was a nice story, that's all.
Oh. I'm saying that we drank from the well.
Never mind about the well. It's just a... Listen to this.
Guantanamo Bay detainees may get an invite to Berkeley. Is there anything you guys at Berkeley haven't done? Can we suggest some things? Let's see. You have insulted the U.S. Marines. And I know that you do it for attention. I know you do it so that you can continue to make that ever, that constant claim there in San Francisco, in Berkeley, in the East Bay. So that constant claim that you are somehow different. You stand apart. That you are the last vestiges of the, I don't know what you want to call it, the counterculture of the 60s. I don't want to say hippie, because I think there's a lot of people who currently are of that ilk in Northern California and elsewhere that probably weren't old enough to be hippies. I think they fell in love with the idea that there was a Vietnam sort of era counterculture, and they didn't get a part of it, and so they want to be a part of it now. I mean, that kind of quote-unquote lame-ass politics. So, we've insulted the U.S. Marines. I don't know what else you've done, but now Guantanamo Bay detainees might have a new home in the United States, Berkeley. The city council is to vote on February the 15th on a resolution to invite detainees who have been cleared of wrongdoing to resettle within Berkeley's sunny confines. Why don't they go home?
That's what my point was.
Why don't they go home, Berkeley? Why are you inviting them there? Why are you inviting these people to your town? If they've been cleared of wrongdoing, I understand they can go anywhere. But why? What is the special thing you got for these cats? I know. You want to show them that America really is a cool place, and that our government isn't a fascist. You know that this, we are not necessarily the fascist goose stepping bastards that our government is. Is that it?
That's probably what they mean.
Well, what does that mean? You know, in a fascist state, the people goose step too. You know, so if they go up and they're living the life in Berkeley, then they're going to think America's a really cool place. They're going to want to stay, and they're going to become more liberal, and they're going to join your city council, and then I'm really going to be pissed off.
Yeah, but you know what? If they join the city council, that don't mean they're going to blow nothing up.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they will blow something up. They got all the freedom to do whatever the hell it is that they want. Maybe they're going to, you know what, as long as they're up in Berkeley with all of these people that are laying all this love on them, maybe they'll figure this is a perfect opportunity to make themselves a dirty bomb.
Now, you can't say that.
I don't know. Guantanamo Bay detainees may have a new home. Berkeley, the city council is to vote on the 15th on a resolution to invite detainees who have been cleared of wrongdoing to resettle within Berkeley's sunny confines. What do you mean sunny? What does that mean, sunny confines? What's that?
Well, it's sunny up there.
No, it ain't, man. It's not sunnier than down here. I mean, I like the Bay Area and everything, man, but, you know, Berkeley's like fogged in just like San Francisco. It's colder and foggier and funkier up there than it is down here.
Well, you want to come down here?
Yeah, I would. Why don't you guys settle down here? I got a real nice place for you. You know? Someplace where no one's going to mess with you.
Yeah, I bet you do, man, out in the woods where nobody can hear you scream.
Right. In the desert, no one can hear you scream. I better not say that. That's not nice. Of the 38 detainees who've been cleared, Berkeley would invite two, a Russian ballet dancer and an Algerian who was a top-rated Italian chef in Austria. Our hearts are with all those people who were never tried, held for years, and in some cases tortured, said Wendy Kennan, chairwoman of the Dumbasses for Peace and Justice in Berkeley. Although I don't have any proof of that torture thing, why not just say it because everyone accepts it as true, said Wendy. And as we like to say on this show, you know, waterboarding is such torture. Do you know anybody that hasn't been waterboarded? Everybody in the press has been waterboarded. Christopher Hitchens got waterboarded. Every talk show host I know, Mancow got waterboarded. I think Bill Handel got waterboarded. I wanted to get waterboarded, but Dale Dyer, a very close personal friend, didn't want to waterboard me because he thought I'd die.
Yeah, he thought you'd die of a heart attack or something, man.
he's going to waterboard you? You thought you'd die from it, huh?
Yeah. I said, Dale, why don't you... Dale would be a guy I'd trust to waterboard me, even though, you know, waterboarding is you feel like you're drowning. So he said, no, I don't want to do it to you. So Wendy Kennan, chairwoman of the city's Peace and Justice and Love and Flowers and Groovy Things Commission, said, our hearts are with all those people. Your hearts? Really? You don't even know them. I bet you don't think 1 minute about them, Wendy. I bet you think about that Russian ballet dancer and the Algerian who's a top-rated Italian chef because you got just the right restaurant that you'd like to see him in, your favorite, the place where you have a corner booth, and then the Russian ballet dancer, who knows what you got in mind for him.
Yeah, probably worse than waterboarding.
I'll bet.
Yeah, that bitch probably want to had that guy do a ballet, all right. A ballet right on.
All right, watch it. Anyway, the two would move to Berkeley and live with local families. Nonprofits would help them find work. Oh, really? Well, wait a minute. He's a Russian ballet dancer. What do you mean, find work? You got to put him to work as a ballet dancer. Otherwise, you don't give him no dignity, the dignity what he's entitled to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got to have a ballet. Don't they have a ballet company?
San Francisco's got a ballet company, the San Francisco Ballet. All big cities have a ballet company of some kind. Los Angeles has a ballet company. I mean, Houston, New York, they all have ballet companies.
Berkeley ballet.
God, spit it out, man.
No kidding, man. What are you saying?
I said it's Berkeley ballet.
I don't think Berkeley's got a ballet. I think San Francisco's got a ballet. I can't even believe we're talking about this. However, if the people of Berkeley want to embrace the Russian ballet dancer, and I think it would be justice, beautiful justice, if the Russian ballet dancer got to Berkeley and decided, you know, he didn't want to be a ballet dancer anymore, that he'd just as soon, I don't know, probably start, like, you know, work at a club as a DJ. Anyway, the two would move to Berkeley and live with local families. Hopefully they won't steal from them, but you never know. Berkeley would not spend any money from its general fund on the plan, which shows you how cheap they are up there. I'm kidding, but why wouldn't you? Now, they're going to use nonprofits. So Berkeley will say, yeah, come on up here, but then the nonprofits would pay for it. The plan, however, could hit a roadblock with the Department of Defense. The Ike Skelton National Defense Authorization Act of 2011, signed by President Obama on January the 7th, a president that was voted for by many progressives and I'm sure members of the Berkeley City Council, as well as everybody in Code Pink. And all of a sudden, the president's saying, hey, slow it down. President Obama, I'm telling you, everything I predicted about that guy came true. He pissed off more liberals than he ever pissed off conservatives. Prohibits the United States from funding the relocation of cleared detainees. It prohibits the United States. But this is a not-for-profit that has nothing to do with the U.S. government. So that leaves the detainees in limbo. They have no passports, no visas, no money, and no jurisdiction that wants them. Why don't you have passports or visas or money? Why do they not have that?
Did they take it from them?
No, they didn't take it from them. They didn't have any passports. They didn't have any visas. They didn't have anything because they are not members of any recognized fighting force. They're not members of any recognized, the citizens of any recognized country. They're not members of any recognized military unit. They are quite beyond the definition of international law, which is what some of us have been trying to say for years and years and years and years. And nobody wants to talk about that. So now here they are. They got no visas, no nothing, because they intended that to be the case. And no one wants them. But Berkeley and a few cities in Massachusetts that have passed similar resolutions, they can't return to their native countries for fear of harassment or torture. Well, really? Berkeley's newest residents would include Daniel something, or this guy's name I can't pronounce, an Algerian chef who worked at an upscale Italian restaurant in Vienna. After his work visa was not renewed, he went to Canada but was not granted asylum. Feeling he had few places to go, he moved to Afghanistan, was arrested while crossing into Pakistan in 2002, trying to escape the violence, according to the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York. Afghanistan. Why would you go to Afghanistan in the middle of a war?
That's a good point.
Why would you go to Afghanistan in the middle of a war? Mr. Mizian is college educated, speaks several languages, loves to draw and paint. He reads mystery novels, and he's just all that in a bag of pork rinds, said J. Wells Dixon, senior attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, which is working on his case. Well, you guys better work a little harder there, Mr. What's your name? Dixon, get your ass in gear and get this guy a place to live, okay? He's out, he's free, he's cool, everything's groovy. He's not a tortured terrorist guy. So get your ass in gear there at the Center of Constitutional Rights and show us how it's done, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
Show us how it's done, man. Or is it some other problem? That's the thing. A lot of these guys will get out of detention there in Guantanamo, and all of these people with the milk of human kindness in their veins will try to help them. And so, you know, all of a sudden, it's going to be kind of tough. Well, why is that? I'll tell you why. Because the very people going to try to help them don't trust them as far as they could throw them either.
Wow.
All right, we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and this Radio for Patriots by Patriots. We'll be talking a little bit more about the Clarence Thomas situation. You know, a guy who's a conservative justice, and his wife is a conservative, so he better just not be involved in any health care debate. And some other ridiculous laws like ticketing the homeless. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, world famous Phil Hendry Show. This is radio for Patriots, by Patriots, and our Patriot hotline is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Don't forget our website, get a backstage pass, watch the live streaming video, the live streaming audio, and the archives and the podcasts. It's a fun place. It's really, truly, it's a fun place. And when you go there and talk about the money, the entertainment that you get on our website is it's a beautiful thing. So check it out, philhendryshow.com. And coming up later this month, we begin to, well, there's going to be a lot of exciting things happening to the video aspect of the Phil Hendry program. Right now, we've got probably the best quality video picture of any radio show out there. And I'm being very serious. Even Rush, and I love Rush. But and I love Mark Levin, and I love, you know, Glenn, all those cats. But none of them have got the picture quality that we've got on our live streaming video. And we're going to have a multi-camera approach. We're going to have
you gonna have like special effects and everything.
We're going to have special effects. I'm going to be doing the show while on water skis. No, I'm kidding about that.
Yeah, but you're going to have like the picture of like Afghanistan or something.
I'm going to have what?
You said, are you going to have a picture of Afghanistan?
A picture of Afghanistan?
Yeah, it looked like you're doing a show in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I could do that. I could have Afghanistan behind me. We're going to have, in other words, we'll have a blue screen or green screen, whatever color we decide.
You have like a blue screen so you could stand and do the weather.
I'm not going to stand and do the weather, but yeah, I guess I could. What are you, nuts? What is that? Hi, welcome to the radio show. Now, here in Chicago... Anyway, so just the, you know, we're kind of building out the presentation here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 877-876-7445, our Patriot hotline. Now, did I do the Guantanamo Bay thing already? I can't remember now.
I don't know.
Did I do Guantanamo Bay? Yeah, I already did Guantanamo Bay. What am I doing? I know what I wanted to do. I wanted to get more into Thomas, but I was going to hold off on that. I'm completely discombobulated. What story are we doing here, man?
Well, let me find out.
The homeless. Okay, homeless in San Diego. It's kind of goofy. I don't know whether I wanted to do that story or not because it's sounds kind of whack, but who knows? Let's give it a shot. I don't know. They're going to ticket the homeless. The city of San Diego will be changing the way it enforces laws against homeless people sleeping on the streets. Now, they got a problem in San Diego, in a section of San Diego, North Park, or an area that borders North Park, where they have random attacks. I mean, people have been attacked. So I don't know if it's homeless people or not. I heard one guy say, yeah, I got the crap kicked out of me, and I think it was homeless guys. You know how some people are, you know? They can say that they think it was a homeless guy, maybe it wasn't. But the point being... City of San Diego will be changing the way it enforces laws against homeless people sleeping on the street. For the past 6 years, the city's not been able to enforce its illegal lodging ordinance because of a lawsuit filed on behalf of the homeless. According to city officials, on any given night, there could be upwards of 1,000 people sleeping on downtown streets. Their shopping carts, tents, and bags mark their sleeping spots during the daytime hours. Now, under new settlement announced Wednesday by City Attorney Jan Goldsmith, the rules have changed. This will be good for downtown, this will be good for taxpayers, and this will be good for the homeless, he said. The city will now be able to ticket a homeless person sleeping on the streets between 9 p.m. and 5:30 a.m. if a shelter bed is available and the person refuses it. Now, that makes sense. Channel 10 News spoke with homeless people in the East Village of San Diego who say they don't always want a helping hand. That's stupid. You can't force a person to take help because that's what you want them to do. Yes, you can. Yeah, you can. You can pass an ordinance saying you can't sleep on a street. Now, you can say, as a homeless person, I'm suing because I want to sleep on it. Well, you don't get to sleep on the street. You can sue and say that you want to sleep on a military base. You can sue and say that you want to sleep on top of a private building. There's some areas you don't get to sleep. And the public has decided that you don't get to sleep out on the street. Well, that's not fair. It isn't? How about a bed? Well, there are no beds. If we find that there is that there are beds available in the city, beds at shelters available in the city, and you're not sleeping in that bed, instead you're out on the street, you get a ticket. I like that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Otherwise, you know, people out on the street say, hey, there's a bed right across the street. Why aren't you in that? And they'll say, oh, I didn't know it was there, you know.
Well, they can walk across the street and say, here's the bed right here. Oh, I didn't know it was there. I would have, yeah. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be back with more here. Website, philhenryshow.com. Republicans promise to cut $100 billion in spending. We'll see. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
It's by Patriots. Phil Henry here with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard as we continue to fight the good fight here for an American public that has had the siphon stuck in there, you know what, long enough. Wherever you siphon, whatever you're siphoning, you know.
Yeah.
Republicans now are promising $100 billion in spending cuts. Now, you can't say that you're promising $100 billion in spending cuts and you're not delivering $100 billion in spending cuts. And by the way, don't say that you're going to deliver $100 billion in spending cuts. You understand that the Patriot Act, which President Bush took all kinds of crap for, I mean, the Patriot Act was the reason that Bush was called Hitler. It was the reason that Bush was called a war criminal. It was the reason that Bush was called, you know, an autocrat. It was the reason. My God, if the left didn't have the Patriot Act, 90% of the things that they were talking about and worrying about, supposedly, during the Bush years would have been gone. They wrapped their legs around that Patriot Act, man, and rode that the way they're, pardon the expression, the way they're wrapping their legs around Sarah Palin and riding that one.
They are, man. Did the Patriot Act to Sarah Palin.
Now what happens? Now we have a president in President Obama who wants to extend that. The Holder Justice Department wants to extend the Patriot Act. They want the protections provided for in the Patriot Act. And there's lots of people that say that there are constitutional questions regarding the Patriot Act, but in the year after year after year after year that the Patriot Act has been in existence, we've just not seemed to, we're not able to find the constitutional compromises in that Patriot Act. Oh, sure, there's a section of it here, and there's another section of it over there. I mean, these guys, people that were out, when you set out to vilify a human being because you just don't like the direction he's taking the country, when you set out to vilify someone, not because the policies that he enacts are wrong, but because you just don't like him, and you don't like what he represents, you wind up sooner or later looking like a horse's ass. And if you progressives and liberals out there don't think you look like a complete jackass saying that George Bush was a war criminal, but, you know, let's extend the Patriot Act, or worse yet, George Bush was a war criminal, but you know what? I don't like Obama either.
Yeah, man, after they're all lining up to vote for him and everything.
Yeah, they loved Obama before he got elected.
Right. But, oh, well, all of a sudden now, Obama ain't getting the job done. And we're just having a real tough luck with presidents these days, aren't we? Are we having a tough luck with presidents these days? Or is the world just getting kind of scary and tough to live in these days? Well, I know. The world is tough to live in, and it's scary because of presidents. Maybe that's it. The world is tough to live in, and it's scary sometimes, regardless of who the hell the president is. That's the answer to the question, but it's a little too simple. And sometimes we can find the answers that way. However, I digress. Point being, when you say you're going to do something, you got to do it. Now, you clowns, and excuse me for saying this, but you Republicans in the House, were asked to vote to extend the Patriot Act, and you couldn't get it done. What's your problem? What's your problem, man?
Yeah, what was the problem?
Well, John Boehner, he ain't all that, I guess, because the Patriot Act was one of, I believe, one of the shining moments for the Bush administration at a time when nobody knew what to do. Nobody knew how to protect this country from this new threat. No one had any idea what direction to go in. People were walking around with their head in their hands. It was a nightmare. And slowly we cobbled together some kind of a way to proceed in a free society. And every step of the way, it was questioned. Every step of the way, the constitutionality of this and that. And it wasn't just questioned. I mean, every step of the way, Bush is another example of what a war criminal he is. And every step of the way is another example of what a jackball he is. And every step of the way, we had a new reason to hate the guy. And I'm going to tell you something right now. You know, Barack Obama may be a lot of things, but that man stood on the steps of the Capitol there, and he was waving to George Bush's helicopter as it was flying away. And I remember thinking, Obama is waving and thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? I got to take over now. So he wanted, for whatever reason, to extend the Patriot Act. And so did the Holder Justice Department, and the Republicans in the House couldn't get that one done. And the only guy you blame for that is Boehner. So what I suggest you do, Mr. Speaker, is you better back up and take another couple of runs at this thing. Because I just heard where the top Republican on the House Appropriations Committee now says that the fight to cut spending could lead to a government shutdown. This is Mike Simpson, and he's talking some tough stuff. He says, I know that that's not something leadership wants to do. Is it a possibility? Yes, it's a possibility. But we're going to do everything we can to make sure that doesn't happen. Simpson, who chairs the House Appropriations Subcommittee, is the highest-ranking Republican. Conservatives are forcing the House GOP leaders to cut more spending this year than they had planned in order to live up to the Republican pledge to cut $100 billion in spending before the end of the year. And they are forcing you to live up to this pledge. Now, either you're going to do it or you guys aren't worth... You're not worth the polish you put on your shoes in the morning. Don't say it and then not do it. It was already going to be hard to negotiate whatever spending cuts come out of the House with the Democratic-led Senate. With even deeper cuts, it will be more difficult to come to an agreement on a spending bill. The current government funding bill expires on March the 4th. There's an awful lot of members of our conference who said, no, I committed to cutting $100 billion, Simpson said. Why would you guys commit to something like that? And then all of a sudden, well, I mean, don't you open your... We're so tired of you people opening your mouths. And now I'm talking a Republican. Can't just keep borrowing the dollars so that the debt, you know, we're pushing it back, man. You know, it's not a 30-year lease. It's not an 80-year lease. It's a 150-year lease. Or it's a 150-year mortgage. That's causing tension inside the new House Republican majority as GOP leaders were getting their first taste of how hard it is to control the new Republican lawmakers demanding their leadership live up to campaign promises. What, Bud?
Well, I mean, what if they're Republicans, why aren't they going to do it?
Some of them are conservative, and they don't want to, they're forcing it. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, these cats got elected in this most recent congressional election, and they are dyed-in-the-wool conservatives. They are apart from the entrenched Republicans that are currently in the House. They're demanding that the leadership live up to this pledge of cutting spending. House GOP leaders met on Thursday afternoon with freshman Republicans to go over ideas for additional spending cuts, and later the whole Republican conference met to discuss the divisive issue. So you've got some traditional Republicans there that don't want to do it.
Yeah, but if you're in the Republicans...
Well, I mean, look, here's something the American people don't get. And I know that, you know, people would say, well, why has it got to be that way? Well, I mean, you know, you're going back 200 years. When you've got a Congress and you've got a leadership, a Republican leadership, that's been around for a long time in Washington, and now you bring in a bunch of these fresh-faced guys, these conservatives from all these districts, and they're coming in to kick some ass, they're up against a leadership that does things a different way. They're up against a leadership that says, well, we'll just, you know, hear from you guys and just you guys take your seats because we have some other things we want to talk about. And this is not the, so the way these guys are rushing in there, man, and wanting to get this stuff done is not the way they do it. I'm not saying that they're wrong. I think that they should. I think that they should say to the leadership, the way you guys do things, man, stinks.
Yeah, but I'm not going to have to tell John Boehner.
Well, it would be embarrassing for John Boehner to go up against these Republican freshmen who want these $100 billion in spending cuts enforced, and because it would be a very, very clear split between the leader of the Republican Party and this new class of freshman congresspeople.
Yeah, but that's what the people want to do.
Well, I agree with you, man. I agree with you. But to get things done as a party, you see where your Republican leader looks like a horse's ass because the freshmen are forcing him into this decision. You know, I mean, you make the cat look, unless, you know, Boehner wants to say, unless he wants to commit right along with him, Boehner can do that, you know.
I don't know what you mean.
What do you mean you don't know what I mean?
What do you mean you're going to look like a horse's ass?
If he doesn't want to do this $100 billion spending cuts, like these congressional freshmen do, I agree with them. I think they should do it. I think Boehner ought to just go ahead and swallow it. And that's where that's at, man. I mean, you can't, you know, the times, these are difficult times and these are dangerous times and they're requiring some difficult and dangerous things to do. So, you know, don't bother me with that horse dung. Now,
yeah, but are they going to do it?
I don't know, but I'm telling you, that's what they ought to do. But if they got to go up against Boehner, you know, and they got to make him look like a bad guy, then make him look like a bad guy. I wonder if they got the guts to go through with it. That's my question. All right, now, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak has refused to step down. It was a big speech today. He refused to step down, but he said in a nationally televised speech that he would hand more authority to his vice president, this guy Suleiman. A move that drew rage and bewilderment from hundreds of thousands of protesters packed into Cairo's Tahrir Square. Now, this is all well and good. Now, none of this has any meaning or interest for the American people except for one thing and one thing only. What happens after Mubarak leaves?
Yeah, that's going to be the Muslim Brotherhood and everything.
Well, here's the thing. American foreign policy has, it seems, always had to contend with this monolithic opponent represented either in the face of communist, militarist, monarchies, kingdoms. We've always, as a country, found ourselves at odds with some large, staid form of governance that we stand against. It was communism for many years. Before that, it was the emperors of Europe. I mean, one of the things we did early on, and I say early on, in the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln said to the French, because what the French did, they pulled a fast one on us. This is one of the reasons why maybe some people, I don't know, it's probably not why people don't like French, but it's this thing between us and the French goes way back. We're in the middle of a civil war, and what do the French try to pull? They send into Mexico an archduke who's Austrian, and he's going to become the new emperor of Mexico. And he's going to be the emperor of Mexico, installed by the French, and he's going to sort of do the bidding of the French, but he's going to be the emperor of Mexico. His name was Maximilian. Now, when do you think they pulled this?
Well, they're doing it in the Civil War.
They did it in the Civil War. Now, they did two things to piss off Lincoln. Number one, that's a violation of the Monroe Doctrine at a time when the Monroe Doctrine really meant something because Europe was trying to establish its Europe was still trying to extend its colonial reach into the New World. It was still trying to set up colonies. And here are the French turning Mexico into a fiefdom. That's number one. Number two, the thing that really pissed Lincoln off, they did it in the middle of a war the United States was having with itself, a civil war. Now, we were backing in Mexico, and Lincoln was, and the U.S. government was backing a native Mexican uprising led by one of the greatest of all Mexicans. And guess what? I forget his name.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I do. It's like, I don't know why, but I forget that, you know, I should know, but I forget. And his name is on the tip of the tongue, of the tips of every Mexican's tongue. He's like almost like a George Washington himself. But Lincoln said to the French, he said, you know, you can't, you pissed me off now. Oh, yeah. when this civil war is over, I'm going to have about 500,000 to 1 million men who are battle-hardened, who are veterans of a long and bloody war, and I'm going to put them down into Mexico, and I'm going to kick that Kenya stuck in there out of there. That was essentially his message to Napoleon, Napoleon III, who was running France at the time. The United States has always stood against these monolithic efforts, and one of them is the Islamist. Now, we don't know anything about these guys. Yes, we've stood against autocrats when it was, for instance, in the case of Juarez, Benito Juarez. Thank you very much, Jason. Benito Juarez, who is the who did become the president of Mexico and is considered to be one of the great fathers of Mexico, that poor, tortured country, a beautiful country, and a country that deserves so much better from its leaders than it's getting. I mean, the Mexican government. Anyway, we also stood against the emperors and the communists, and now we have Islamists. And one of the things that America has never really found to be all that pressing are these tin-horn dictators around the world. In other words, are we going to go up against a guy like Somoza in Nicaragua, a guy who's holding down the fort for us in Central America? Yeah, that's right. And you progressives and liberals who love to, you know, quote Noam Chomsky and say things like, you see, this is the blowback we're getting from our colonialist. You don't know the first thing about colonialism. What the United States of America has done since its very birth is what it's about. The U.S. goes out, business people from the U.S. go out, and we look for markets. And it ain't anything that the French haven't done, or the British haven't done, or the Russians haven't done, or the Germans haven't done. It isn't anything that any other developed nation hasn't done. But because we're a big target, everybody sees the big bullseye on our back and goes after us, and they think we created this world. My God, when we went into Iraq, you know what we found? We found missiles made in France. You think the frogs got any heat for that? Oh, no, they're not getting heat for that, man, because they're the French. They're the civilized French. Thank God for Sarkozy, because when he got elected, I realized the French are not that stupid. So the United States will, at times, use the dictator. We used Hussein, and when we were done with him, out he goes. We used Noriega, and I got no problem with that, because you want to know why? I believe in my country first, last, and always. We were not using individuals that were representatives of fantastic governments with all of these marvelous democratic principles. We're using autocrats and dictators and tin horns so that we can get done what we want to get done. Is it cynical of me to talk to you like this? No, that's the reality of the world. I don't care who you want to talk to. That's exactly what happens. Now, Mubarak is useful. Why? Number one, they've got a peace treaty with a very good friend of ours, Israel. Israel's had our back on a lot of stuff, man. A lot of stuff. And we've had their back. And they ain't going to change. Obama has said that we're with them for the next 150, 400 years. That's good enough for me. Any president that we have needs to stand with Israel. Mubarak and Egypt, in the person of Anwar Sadat, signed that peace treaty with Israel. That needs to stand. So Mubarak, insofar as that can continue, needs to be where he is. Now, is he constitutionally empowered to do the things he's doing? I don't think so. So he's going to get a lot of heat from his own people. At what point, if this guy's going down, do we cut our ties with him? Is the question. All right, we'll be back to sum it up, man. I got some audio to play from his speech, too. World famous Phil Hendry Show. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots, and our website, philhendryshow.com.
Phil.
That's pretty interesting, Mr. Hendry.
Thank you.
For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com. World famous.
Let him tell about the rest of it.
All right. Well, so Bud wants to know. He wants to know the rest of it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the rest of it. We're talking about the Maximilian, the Emperor of Mexico, and you know how America has dealt down through the years. And so the French put this emperor in here, and we're in the middle of a civil war. Lincoln says, "No way, no way, no way, baby." And they went ahead and did it anyway, because who the hell are you going to tell me? I'm the emperor of, I'm the king of France. I'm sticking this guy down there, and that's where it is. So what we did is we were sending guns and other supplies to Benito Juarez, who was the one of the fathers of the Mexican nation. And Juarez, duly armed, eventually did make his way to Mexico City, apprehended Maximilian. And Emperor Maximilian was not a bad guy. He wanted to be a Mexican. He wanted to lead the Mexican people. But he was not a very sophisticated guy. He didn't know what he was up against. He didn't know that he'd been used. And Benito Juarez had him executed. He was shot and killed, along with, I believe, some generals and some other people. And it wasn't because Juarez was a maniac or an animal. Juarez did that with a very, very specific reason in mind. Juarez did that because he wanted to send a message to Europe. He said, don't you ever do this again. Don't send your emperors, don't send your kings. This is what's going to happen. So Juarez was sending a very specific message to Europe. Emperors and kings that you send over here will be shot on sight. World famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rance. Technical director, of course, is Rick Johnson. And our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. This is radio for patriots, by patriots, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
What did he do with Maximilian?
I just told you what they did to Maximilian. They shot him.
The whole thing, you didn't hear that?
No, I missed it.
Oh, well, I'm sorry you missed it.
Phil Hendry.